Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Bertanes, your host for this empowering hour. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm super happy to introduce Christine to you. Christine Neumann, she's a scientist, microbiome expert, and a leading voice on the future of human health. What many still underestimate, trillions of microorganisms live within us. Yes, influencing not only our physical health, but also our mood, focus, and long-term resilience. Dr. Neumann bridges cutting-edge science with real-life applications. She explains why nutrition is more than calories, why the gut is central to mental health, and how understanding the microbiome can transform prevention and longevity. This is a conversation about science, self-responsibility, and one of the most powerful and overlooked systems in the human body. Welcome here in the show.
Thank you for having me today.
Christine, I would like to start with something from my own life. I was 2 years in hospital and I got a lot of painkiller and antibiotic and so on. And afterwards, after I came out of hospital, I started having problems with my gut. The school medicine told me, oh, this is an autoimmune illness. We don't know where you got this from. For me, it was pretty clear. Getting the antibiosis and the painkiller really went on my gut and destroyed a lot of bacteria and so on. And at this time, I felt really terrible. I felt really sad. I felt like sometimes, I don't know how life will be. And of course, it could have been while being in the wheelchair that I didn't like my situation, but it was more. And I felt that. And then I looked it up and I figured out, yes, this is because of the problems in my gut that I have this kind of depression currently. And knowing this made me feel much better. Understanding my body, that this is a sign of my body telling me, hey, I'm crying for help. I'm shouting for help. Help me.
Yeah, so I totally feel you and exactly what you said. It's about everything is connected and you spending 2 years in hospital, that's a long time. Yes. So it even starts with the food you get there. So usually in hospitals, the food is not the most nutritious food you get. Mm-hmm. And also food makes you happy, makes you feel good if it tastes good. So it you enjoy, so you usually you should enjoy eating. And
that's so right. When I imagine, and I have a picture still from this thing I got on my table, and it was, first, it was not colorful. It was all in gray, beige colors. There was no small flower or something. There were no colors. And then it was a white whey, from a bread made from white whey, and it was coffee, and it was a pudding made from cow milk with whey, and it all smelled similar. And I had a feeling a lot of sugar, a lot of white flour, and a lot of cow milk, and then coffee. So all things where I would exactly say, yes, 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 you are so right. I mean, why do you go to the hospital and get this crap food?
Yeah. I mean, it health starts right there, right? With your food and with your mood.
Yeah.
So it's all combined. And you made a very good point, and I'm happy that you did your research and found the real reason for you feeling not happy. And I mean, and that's also the problem that we still have, although the topic has evolved so much in the last decades, that the physicians still are looking into their school books and tell you what they learned to do, and without seeing the whole picture. And in the whole picture, we have the microbiome, we have our mood, and everything is connected. And the mood is influencing our gut, or our immune system, but the microbes as well, and vice versa. So it's all very connected. And I think this is something that you always must take into account when you're feeling bad, because your mood also reflects directly on your organs, stress. I mean, you feel it. Like if you feel unhappy or you're in a situation where you're not don't you don't feel well. You directly feel it in your body as well. Like there's something tense, your stomach gets tense or something like this. So it's really connected.
Absolutely. I'm absolutely with you, Christine. And I wanted to go back once. It wasn't planned, this question, but talking about colors, I had a retreat of 3 weeks in India a few years ago. It was 3 weeks where I was really expecting colorful food. I was expecting real fireworks on my tongue. And then I got the food. It was a buffet, and everything looked similar. So it was something yellow, it was something light green, it was something darker yellow. And then I said, "Why are you doing this? I mean, we are eating also with the eyes." And they said, "Remember, good food looks terrible. Bad food looks colorful." I said, "No, this can't be possible. I mean, of course you can put artificial colors to it, but nature has so much color." Have you heard this something like this? Because these were really Indians, spiritual Indians, which were supporting the idea of food from the ground, from nature. And I was really thinking, I don't agree with that.
No, so I would have, when you just started saying this or talking about this subject, I thought about Indian culture and Indian food, which is actually very colorful. So I was now, I'm surprised that it is has been not as colorful. And of course, you can argument in two directions. When it's becoming too colorful, then it's becoming artificial and super processed, and you don't want that. But of course, as you say, it can be colorful and healthy, and the more colorful it is, the healthier usually it is. But of course, the healthy color, not the artificial color.
Yes, but it reminds me of my grandmother. You know that we escaped, or my grandmother escaped Romania, and she learned in her home country that they always used flowers to decorate. So she had in her garden just also an area with flowers you could eat. And she decorated always food with some flowers you could eat. And that was, for me, it was a normal. Not having this made me thinking, oh, the food looks a little bit boring.
Yeah. And it's also the problem when it becomes so colorless and so boring. It's probably also overcooked and all the nutritious ingredients are destroyed. And about the flowers, it's a very good analogy to what we also always say in the microbiome space. You must eat very colorful and at least like 30 different fruits or vegetables a week. And that counts into it. It doesn't have to be much. Like a little piece here and there, and then it all feeds a high variety of your gut microbes and contributes to a diverse and happy ecosystem in your gut.
Absolutely. We talked in the beginning of the correlation of mood and food, of mood and of the gut. And we say that the gut is a kind of nerve system, right? A second brain.
Yeah.
Do you want to say a little bit about this, what you figured out about that, and why people are not taking care of this?
Well, why people are not taking care of this is probably because they're not listening to their gut, what they should do, actually. So I think everyone knows and has the ability to do it, but they're ignoring it because of, yeah, the society we live in and how we are being taught to function. But we have a very strong link between the gut and the brain. It's the vagus nerve, which is being influenced by everything that moves between the brain and the gut, and the gut is the whole host of the highest density of microbes on our body, and it's not like the microbes go up the vagus nerve and influence the brain, but all those metabolites that are being released by the microbes are being transferred into the blood and influence our gut brain interaction. So also and also vice versa. So what happens in the brain is stimulating going down into the gut and influencing also our gut microbiome. So if we feel stressed all the time and we release those, for example, high cortisol levels on a constantly high level, that is influencing our gut. in our gut microbes, which are then behaving more and more like a toxic microbiome, which is then leading to a leaky gut. I think you have heard about this, like the gut lining becomes permeable, and then the toxins and even parts of the bacteria can enter into the bloodstream and make it all worse. So it's really, as I said in the beginning, very strong connected.
Yeah, and the leaky gut is, of course, also, I think, a symbol for that, which shows that something which is very strong can be, by a very small change, get into something really dangerous. You have the gut, which is normally in a kind of, there are antagonists. So let's say it like this. One is responsible for making the wall really consistent and strong, and the other is responsible for making the wall also flexible and durable because of flexibility. And if you have this leaky gut, then sudden there comes gaps into it. So this is really dangerous because it brings the system out of range, and it shows from my point of view how important the balance is and how important it is that it's not just making the wall really strong or making the wall really smooth how you say and in a way that it feels good, but it has to come together. No, it needs both parties. And I think the for the humans, it's super super hard to figure out what they have to do to get there, because they lost a lot of people lost their feeling for that. And I mean, you said they often don't listen to the gut, right? I mean, I sometimes wonder because the gut is making noise, no? The gut is painful, is giving us pain, but nevertheless, when I figured out that after this operation, I shouldn't eat anything with cow milk. I shouldn't eat anything with white whey. The people said a lot of people said, "Why?" I said, "My stomach, my gut is giving me the answer. Don't do this. It doesn't feel good." And they say, "Yeah, but then go to the chemist and buy some pills and or painkiller, or so then you can eat that no matter what." I say, "What? Painkiller? Taking painkiller to drink cow milk? Okay, this is weird."
Yeah, to kind of calm down your body's signals, and then if you keep ignoring them, it gets worse and worse and worse, right? So, of course, the painkiller can help instantly, but I would avoid taking them and go to the core of it and find out why do I have pain.
Christine, why are we doing this? I mean, why are we so often living against the signals of our bodies?
I guess it's because we learn that we must function. We are only a valuable human being if we do function. So, and this is one point. And the other part is also, where do you get your food? Do you have the time to cook your meal, in a healthy meal? Or are you in a rush? You have to buy something from the bakery at the corner. And sometimes I'm hungry and I'm standing in front of the bakery and I don't find a single piece what I would eat now, because as a microbiologist and a microbiome expert, it's in my internal, like I can't think about eating anything that is I know and killing my microbes. So I go on hungry because I won't eat all that. But this is you don't have to those many possibilities that would also give you healthy food. So that's another angle. I think that's, I mean, I see it here in Germany. It's a little bit evolving and it's getting better, and you have more choices to make from. But still, the heavily the most part of the food that you can get just on the way, it's still unhealthy.
Absolutely. I mean, yesterday when I went to the train and it was 10 something, I was really surprised as I could get some fruits, fresh fruits. I could get some smoothies, and I could get some vegan sausages at that time in the train station. So this is really, Really something new. And we are continue talking about food. We are continuing talking also how you got there to this topic after the break. So let's stay connected and we see each other back in 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Christine, we talked about food. We talked about the gut. You did something very, very special. You created a standard, a certification standard for microbiome-friendly cosmetics and a science-based benchmark now recognized globally by manufacturers, retailers, and ingredient suppliers. This is, of course, something really new, and it's very important that you're doing this. Has this changed the perspective of a lot of stakeholders?
Yes, so when I started back in 2018 with the development of the standard, it was, well, the reason why we did this was because we saw that the cosmetics industry, like mainly the big players, they were already playing with the terms around the microbiome. But the problem was that there was no evidence that around that, or they didn't show any evidence. So that led to the idea that we wanted to develop this certification. And it was, first of all, the industry was very skeptical for different reasons, because the microbiome is still a very complex topic. So it was earlier and it still is. And from the other hand, they were also scared, I guess, because this would lead to the result that they would see, or customers would see, that the products are actually maybe not as good as for the microbiome as they should. And one obstacle was also, I think, for the broad customer to really understand, because we just talked about the gut microbiome all the time. But, and this is, I think, the biggest obstacle, that people know that our whole body is like a planet, a whole ecosystem. And we have different ecosystems on our bodies, and skin is very much colonized with the microbiome as well. And this is the first step, that the customer must understand this and even like then ask for products that are good for it. And what happened in the last 6 or 7 years was that the industry was very skeptical about this topic. They didn't really know how to approach it. Some even asked us, what is the microbiome? They didn't even hear the word before. And that kind of changed over the time. Then they understood, okay, there's a microbiome, what can we do? And now it's actually an asset that is a fixed asset in that whole community, industry. And besides reducing wrinkles, anti-aging, you know, all those terms that you hear in the cosmetics industry, because there was also a shift from the customer's perspective, from like just adding something topical and making the skin look beautiful, more beautiful, to actually a beautiful skin. The core of beautiful skin is healthy skin. So there's a more holistic view from the end customer that is now demanding products that are healthy and not disturbing. And that is where our certification comes in. That makes it makes sure that the products are not harming that our microbiome, or not harming the microbiome that we have on our skin. because a lot of products do influence it and do ours are antibacterial. They are made to last long, which means that they contain a lot of preservatives in high concentrations, and that is also affecting the microbes on our skin, on top of perfumes, fragrances, which are antibacterial, and soaps, detergents. So we shouldn't wash ourselves too much. But yeah, this is how it evolved. Like, the industry has now acknowledged that it is a very important part of the whole cosmetic claims environment, and now we are there to help them, and it's a great task.
What do you think, Christine? Why has it taken so long? Because I mean, I can remember years ago where I used last time luxury brand's cream for my face, and sudden I got sparkles and dots, and it felt the skin felt hot. And I thought, what is this? I paid so much money for this. And then reading the ingredients, I thought, oh my God, okay, now I know the answer. I mean, what is the reason for this? Is it cheaper to produce it with all these chemical ingredients? Or does it make the skin dependent on this cream that you can't stop with it by using this? Or what is the reason for this? Because I mean, as someone from outside who has no idea about this could imagine that it's much cheaper if you just have two ingredients at all, and that's it.
Well, that's different angles. But first of all, especially the more expensive products, they want to have activity. They want to add as many ingredients that do something to your skin to make you feel the product is doing something, and very fast. And sometimes that can be too much and make your skin react on it. Sometimes, for some people, it's fine. They don't have as sensitive skin and they don't notice anything. But for a lot of people, it's too much. And well, I'm also, from my perspective, is that we don't need all these actives. We just need to have a healthy life and not apply too much on our body. But on the other angle is, as you said, the more or the lower the quality of the ingredients, then the more irritation you will also get. And the lower the quality, of course, the cheaper it is. And those very high luxury products, I've made experience also with our testing that a lot of them, they contain so many ingredients and also harsh ingredients that they are not at all microbiome friendly. So I would rather go for products that are already transporting the message of being soft to your skin, using less ingredients at low amounts. And it's also a lot of work to do to find the balance between having a product that is still safe, containing enough amount of preservatives, but still not too much to harm your microbiome. And that is trial and error, a lot of work in the research departments of the company. So they avoided the cost, of course, and now they're also looking for better raw ingredients. But this is evolving, and this is also going along with the whole sustainability aspect. And it's nice to see that it's getting better. But yeah, I would always be careful when buying a product and applying it on my skin.
So, if you would give an advice to our listeners, then you would give more the advice and don't take care of the price. It's not the higher the price, the better the quality. It's more the less ingredients there are, the better the cream.
Yeah, well, not always, because some ingredients might be just three ingredients and they're highly concentrated, and that's also not good. But yeah, usually it is like this. Look at the ingredient list, it should be short. It's also like, if there's very complex chemical names on it, then it might also not be good. But you never have a rule of thumb. But and look at the kind of ingredients that you have in there. Avoid alcohols, avoid fragrances, avoid too much. Like, even also look at the shelf life. If it's 3 years, then it's probably packed with preservatives, and you don't want that. So rather take a small sample or small tube and the fresher the product, the better, actually.
So maybe something else. I mean, our listeners might ask themselves, you said with perfume or without. Is it better with perfume or is it better without perfume? Can you say this in general?
Well, it would be better without, for sure. But of course, all of us, even I, we do smell on the product. We want it to smell good in some way. But you can make a difference here. And I think that has also changed. The products don't smell as much anymore as they did like 10 years ago. So you can smell it. Like if it has a nice, soft, gentle smell, then it's fine. But if it's too much, and like also I have there's a soap, a liquid soap for hands, which is smelling really, really intense. And actually, if you like the smell, it's nice, but it's too much. So if you smell it, like my neighbors, they're using it every time I walk in their house, the whole house smells like this is one soap. So
Oh.
it's too much then. Just try to use less fragrance.
I mean, isn't it that if we talk about fragrances and we just talked about creams, isn't it also like this? A fragrance is not a fragrance. We have fragrances which are which are not having chemicals as a base, but also real plant extracts.
Yeah, so you have the essential oils, and yeah, for the fragrance area, it's a whole universe. Because if there's fragrance on the product, it says fragrance, and it can be. I just learned that it can be 40,000 different ingredients, and you just
Wow.
don't know because they're not mandated to write it in the ingredients list. Only if it is an allergen, like if it's an allergen, it must be listed on the ingredients list. And a lot of natural essential oils are really strongly antibacterial. And so it's also not necessarily a better product if it's 100% natural, because those natural ingredients can also be very
Intense.
aggressive, yeah, intense.
So you would say it is also if you want to change from a more cos more chemical cosmetics or more for cosmetics which is not that skin friendly to nature, you should do it slowly because otherwise you might be frustrated as there can happen also something really dramatically using natural ingredients, right?
Yeah, so not slowly maybe, but just really looking at the ingredients, also at the smell, as I just said, that it doesn't smell too strong, and looking at the ingredients list, it can be better, but it doesn't have to be. Sometimes the synthesized ingredients are even less harsh or even more sustainable than something taken from nature. So it really It's difficult for a customer to find out which is the better product, actually. And in the end, you must also find out which feels good on your skin and what is good for you. And yeah.
I understood you're an expert in this field. So, what cream are you using?
I like the Velleda Skin Food range a lot because, yeah, for my hands, if they become really dry in winter, it's really helping me, and I like all their products really much. And we have all actually tested all of them, so they're all good. And what I also like a lot for my kids is a brand called Plants Are Purple.
Yes, I know this.
They have this mousse, body mousse, or something like this, and it's really helping. Like there's not much ingredients, it has a very nice but soft smell. And like little kids, they get those spots, those dry spots, and nothing helps but this cream. I apply it 2 times, 3 times, and it's gone.
Oh, wow, that's
Like
great.
also good for eczema, and I use it for removing makeup, and yeah, it has this oily consistence. And it's yeah, but some people don't like it because it's too oily. But I love it.
This is great. So who would like to buy it? It's plants are purple and it is the mousse, right?
Yes, the comfort mousse is the name. Yeah, but you
I
cannot buy it in summer, so hurry up. They
Ah,
don't ship it in summer because it's melting
that's
at
great
high
that
temp.
you did.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very good. That shows that they're working also in a sustainable way, right? Somewhere it started. So there must have been a time in your life where the small Christine says, or the said, or maybe the Christine in there and the later ages, oh, I would love to step into this topic. What was it, Christine? Who was your role model? When has it started? Is there a kind of story or experience with you want, which you would like to share with us?
Well, it started with curiosity, I guess. So I was always curious about how life works, how our environment works, because our body's such a miracle and how it functions and so complex. And I was always like, how does it work? And I was always fascinated by this. So that was always my motivation to go deeper into that subject. And that's why I studied biology in the first place. And then, besides learning about the really molecular mechanisms and genetics and things like this, I also wanted to do something in my life that would, that's very idealistic, but I would always wanted to do something that would help humanity. And I stepped into the microbial field, because there's a lot of diseases with bacteria. So it was all from the disease point of view, actually, from pathogenics and bacteria bad, and we have to fight them to not get sick. I worked for a company in Regensburg. They were developing new antimicrobials that's called Arty-lysines. They're based on enzymes that come from phages. And these are like phages are viruses that only attack bacteria. And in the end of their cycle, they multiply in bacteria and then they need to get out of the bacterium. So they have an enzyme that cuts their cell wall and makes them kind of burst. So this enzyme can be used and modified in order to work from outside. So we throw it on the bacteria and then they are killed. And that was kind of the mechanism which we worked on. And the great advantage of this technology was that it would only work very selectively on those strains or bacteria that make you sick and leave the rest alone. And that was actually the point where we were touching the microbiome topic. And we found out that the microbiome topic was in 2016, 2014, that actually nobody knew about it. Maybe a little bit around the gut with probiotics, and the probiotics market was already very established. But that the microbiome plays a role in so many areas on our bodies, even in wound healing. We did current constant disinfection of wounds is actually killing the microbiome in our wounds, which is then delaying the healing. So you need those healthy microbes in the wounds in order to make the wound heal. That was something that we directly saw with the product that was killing the in chronic wounds. The microbes, the pathogenic microbes. So that was how I started, wrapping my head around the microbiome topic and diving deeper into this.
Super interesting. And I have plenty of further questions, which I'm sure our listeners like to hear the answers to. So we have a 2 minutes small break and we see each other afterwards. So please stay tuned.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving.
Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Christine, you are a microbiome expert. And I mean, we have nowadays, and sometimes you think microbiome is a kind of buzzword. I think if you ask 100 people if you have heard microbiome, say, oh, yes. And if you ask them, what exactly is a microbiome? I think maybe nearly 5 people can tell you what it is exactly. What's the biggest misconception people have about the microbiome?
Yeah, I think it's as we discussed before, when people think about the microbiome, they think about the gut only. And I think this is the biggest misconception. And another misconception, which also researchers do and I do, is thinking about the microbiome and thinking about microbes. Per definition, it's actually the genetic content of the microbes, because the biome is the genetic content of the microbiota. If you really talk about the living cells, it's the microbiota. But anyways, I think it's fine to talk about the microbiome and think about the microbiota, because it's very alike. So and the important part is, I think, rather to be aware that the microbiome is not one microbiome in our gut, but as I said, that we are a whole universe on our body, and we have a lot of different body parts. Actually, the whole body is colonized with microbiota. It's starting with the skin, the mouth, the even the lung, which has been thought to be sterile for a long time. The bladder is colonized. So also here, if we have an imbalanced microbiome in the urogenital tract, and for us in the vagina, we get urinary tract infections very often. So it's all important to know that always in every part of our body that is in contact with the environment, it is colonized by microbes. And each of those body areas is different. It has a different temperature, different sebum content, different moisture, different density of hair follicles. The scalp microbiome is very different from the rest of the body. And so in each different environment, of course, pH is also different, gives a different habitat for different microbes. So we really need to be aware that the scalp microbiome is not the same as the food microbiome, for example. And what is a very, very important, and for us women, a part is the vaginal microbiome, which has so much influence on everything, on our human, women and health. Especially the menopause and what is happening there with the estrogen and the hormones, and everything is so closely connected. And yeah, so about the misconception, I think we need to have a broader picture, and not only our body, but going further, that our body is also connected via the microbes with our environment, with the place we live in, and we also share the microbes with our cohabitants, with our family, and so we can see it like if you would see it as an aura, it's all connected, like in that movie Avatar. You have seen that one?
Yes.
Yeah, it's beautiful, actually, beautiful picture.
This is a really, really beautiful picture. Also, the tree, how the tree is connected with the people again, because I mean, sometimes when people ask me, what is the reason why people don't understand sustainability? I said, if you don't understand and if you don't live sustainability by yourself, how do you want to understand sustainability in the outside you and in the external mm-hmm. part? If you're not loving yourself, how can you love other people? Yeah. If you're not treating yourself with a lot of value and respect, How can you expect, or can others expect you to treat the environment like this? And this is exactly, I mean, with the gut, I mean, listening to your gut, listening to your microbiomes, understanding what your body does. This is biology, is not that you have to learn this for a next exam or whatever in school. Biology should be really that one what tells the essentials about yourself, to understand yourself better, to listen to yourself. This is something which is not taught at school. How do you listen to your body? What your signs and symbols and sounds of the body tell you? What is happening when there's reflux? It's not that you just have to kill the symptom. You have to understand what is happening and what you did before, that you took something which is very sour, that your stomach is telling you, stop it, give me rest. I need to get rid of this and have to get to my own health. And I think it is for a lot of people overwhelming to listen to this because they have no idea what they can do. Are there maybe three immediate actions to improve the microbiome? What would this be?
Actually, it's very, if you think about it, it's not that difficult. It's actually very easy. You just have to, I am a biologist, you just have to go back and think, how did our ancestors actually live? And they lived very healthy when we were hunters and gatherers. So we must go back with as much as we can in our current environment and society to nature as much as we can. So everything we do, we must try to go get out of the artificial habitat that we live in and try to connect as much with nature as possible. And that includes your eating habits, eat widely, eat colorful with everything that you find in your environment, kind of. You don't have to cut different groups of food, but keep the balance rather than cutting like a specific group. You can also eat meat or fish, but always in a very conscious way, from animals that had a healthy, happy life, and even that just once a week or so, for example. And then, as you said, eat flowers, eat herbs, and all like a wide variety, and even in little amounts, is enough to feed a healthy, diverse microbiome. And then the other thing that you can do immediately is go outside, try to spend time in a healthy environment as much as possible, catch up all those phenols and microbes from a healthy environment, go take a walk in the forest or in a park if you're living in a city. You can also bring the nature into your home by having pets. Dogs are great for diversity because they bring a lot of microbes from the environment to your home. Or plants, add as many plants as you can into your home. They will give you even oxygen and bring all those healthy plant compounds to your home. And then the other part, which is what we are actually doing, is try to stop the hygiene overkill. Don't clean your house too much. Don't clean yourself too much, because everything, also your home, has a microbiome. And if you clean everything like sterilization, that's gonna reflect on your microbiome as well.
Absolutely. And this is a great advice because I think the most easiest are the ones which you really do. The com more complicated, the less you do and think, oh my God, that's so complicated. I don't understand it. I don't know how to do this. So I leave everything as it is. How early in life is the microbiome shaped? And what does it mean for children?
Yeah, that's a very important question, actually, for everyone who's becoming a parent. It is already starting in the womb that the mother's nutrition and stress is reflecting on the baby through metabolites that is crossing the blood barrier. And so it's already important that the mother is eating healthy during pregnancy, and then we have influences during the birth mode. So the natural birth by the vagina is seeding the baby in the way that it should be seeded with the vaginal, but also gut microbes from the mother, and which then are setting the breeding ground for a development of a healthy microbiome. In contrast to C-section, where the baby sees skin microbes first, and in the worst case, even hospital germs that are multi-resistant. So that's one thing. What you can do if you have C-section is to take a sample or a swab from the intimate area of the mother and put it on the baby. But that's under discussion as well, because then it's a safety issue. Well, and then the next step in that development is the nutrition of the baby, and the best the baby can have is mother's milk, because we have the human oligosaccharides, which the industry has not yet achieved to copy in infant formula. So that's the best nutrition for the right microbiome to develop, and it's even more important than the delivery mode. And the first 3 years of life are the most important for the development of a healthy microbiome. And mother's milk, if not possible, for several reasons, I know it can be very stressful. If it sometimes it doesn't work, or you don't have the time because we need to go back to work. So wherever possible, use mother's milk if you have to pump or whatever, or have a doula, which is coming back in some areas that you have mother's milk from someone delivering it. So yeah, that's a very important part. And then I have two kids as well, and it's hard now. They are 7 and 9, and it's not easy to make them eat healthy at all.
Yeah, because there's so much, and we said it in the beginning, very colorful stuff around. And it's not only very colorful, it smells also much more than natural stuff. So I think instead of having the normal the normal positioning, the average of smelling and color, there are so much peaks in this, because I put so much chemicals in it that you have a kind of firework, as I know, by eating, like for example with the Snickers, where you have first the peanuts crushed, and then you have the caramel which comes, and then you have this smash kind of nougat in addition. But you have this crush chocolate around it. So
And
you have
sugar, lots and loads of sugars.
exactly, and the loads of sugars. And I think this sugar is such a huge problem. I mean, we have many books about it, but I think still the people don't understand why. And having this increase of diabetes, where the people are behaving often the same as we discussed in the beginning, that they just say, okay, then I have to give myself injections. Okay, then I eat the Snickers, but take an injection straight after it. By not understanding that it's all signals from our body, right? Who tells us, hey, stop it. I want to be a bit longer there for you, but if you behave like this, I
No
won't stay
chance.
that long.
Yeah. And that's
Exactly.
the incommunicated or non-communicated diseases in the Western civilization that we have because of our eating behavior and all the ultra-processed food and the stress, of course.
Yes, and if I come to this, Christine, I mean, we have a huge increase also in chronic disease, autoimmune illnesses we are facing currently around 100, and we say, and it's a dark number, about 80% of this is women. What role does the microbiome play in chronic disease, and how can you shape it?
Yes, so I think it's better to understand that each disease is actually starting with an inflammation. So we all have low-grade chronic inflammation, and then it's ending up into cardiovascular disease, diabetes, autoimmune condition, and so on. And in every inflammation, the microbiome is playing a role. It's either helping and rebalancing and like in reducing it, or it's adding up to it. So if you already have a microbiome that is out of balance, and toxic for your body, then it will add up to this inflammation. So, as I said in the beginning, it's all very strongly connected. The way that you shape your body by your lived lifestyle and your eating behaviors, this is the feeding ground for the microbes that are then becoming more toxic and contributing to that toxicity in your body. So it's not about, as you said, taking a pill and it's getting better. You have to change your whole lifestyle in order to get better overall. And then a pill might help with it, but it's not the only solution. And I think if you have that in the back of your mind, it's not about having a very strict diet or following certain rules, but just being aware about certain things is making you helping you making decisions that are better for your health overall.
Two last questions. What mistakes do even health-conscious people make when it comes to gut health?
So I think that's, as I just said, it's rather the obsession about following a very strict lifestyle and diet, and then being again stressed just because of that, because you're thinking about your habits all the time, continuously, and being maybe and even skipping maybe certain kinds of foods because they're supposed to be not healthy, and then you're reducing the variety of your foods that you're eating. So I think it's rather the keeping the balance, not stress too much about it, and also listen more to your body, what it tells you. If you feel like you want to eat an egg because you need the proteins right now, then do it. And don't follow a strict diet plan.
Yeah. You said in during our discussion or our talk, you said you have two kids, 7 and 9. And you said also in the first 3 years, the microbiome is settled or is constructed. For the parents outside, do you have maybe one big, an easy tip what they can do in this really challenging time to help their kids taking care of their microbiome?
Well, yeah, let them play in the dirt as much as possible. Let them go outside, play with animals, and yeah, don't clean them as much. So I learned from when I had my kids, you need to bath them every week or even every day and use shower gel and whatever. Don't do that. A baby is clean. It doesn't need any cleanser. You don't need to bath it, and just let it be as nature made it, and let them play and let them get wild.
That's a great, great final word. Thank you so much, Christine, for being with us. Thank you for the engaging discussion and inspiring insights. I really look forward to our ongoing exchange and the impact we will continue to make together the world a better place.
Thank you. It was really lovely talking to you.
So that was the We Empower Show for this week. Join us again next week as we continue on this empowering journey, sharing real stories of self-development and empowerment. Your presence and engagement means a lot to us. We appreciate you taking the time to in. Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, keep shining and empowering others. Together, we rise.